Welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. The first hour of the show, we talked about the Navy SEALs, who are now have been named and declared deceased after 11 days of search. Just awful. So we talked all about that story, and then we started talking about the Houthis and just how inept this administration is. Very specifically, I mean, we played clips from the spokesperson of the Pentagon just making ludicrous claims and talking total nonsense. In silly, petty ways, where she's like, oh, we're completely disrupting the Houthis. And you're like, well, you can't, what do you mean you can't completely disrupt? Right. So, like, that's like a silly critique, but like, to very serious ones as well. Like, oh, we're sending a strong message. Well, no, you're not. We're protecting Americans. No, you're not. We're opening the shipping lanes. No, you're not. Not unless you're Chinese. Right. So, just like straight lies. And then someone called in and talked about the Afghanistan papers. And we had a lot of people email me, like, what are the Afghanistan papers? So, we're going to do a segment on that coming up soon. And I look forward to it. It was one of the pivotal moments in my political thinking life was the Afghanistan papers. It made me like a million times more cynical. It was just like an atom bomb of cynical, like, exploded in my brain. So everyone needs to have it because it's true. It happened. It's real. In our lifetimes, it happened. So anyway, we'll do that more another day coming up. If you want to listen to the whole podcast, you can, if you're SiriusXM subscribe, you can do that. But here I want to present to the final working rebuttal on Trump is mean. I just can't vote for him. I got to vote for Nikki Haley because I just can't. I can't deal with the mean. You hear a lot of people say chaos follows him. That kind of attitude, and I'm losing patience on that. So I wanted to do a good rebuttal. This is the best I could do. Present this argument here. I'm excited for this segment. We'll see how it goes. Like, this will be one of the segments when it's over. I look back and I'm like, that didn't really work. Or, all right. I think that was something. We'll see. This segment is for people who can't vote for Trump because he's mean. Got a bunch of emails from these people yesterday, a couple phone calls, and I want to address this. And I figured grow up is not the caliber of retort that I would prefer to have. I believe that was my response yesterday. And looking back on that, I was like, I can do better than that. I think I can do better than, I'd like to hold myself to a higher standard. So alas, here are the 4 points I would like to make. First point, he's not mean. I don't know what mean means. Second point is, if you want to define mean in a certain way, he's tactically mean, or maybe rationally mean. Third point, if you think he's mean, might I suggest that you don't know what time it is? Well, that sounds very accusatory. Maybe I'll amend that one as we get to it. And then the fourth point is the importance of thick skin. And Alex just alluded to that just a moment ago. All right, so let's go to the first point. He's not really mean. Or let me put it like this. He's mean to people who deserve it. Here's what I say. Trump is tit for tat. Do you remember our game theory analysis that we gave a while back? This is the explainer of Trump's behavior. If you want to understand why Trump behaves the way he does, his game theory strategy is tit for tat. Many people find Trump's behavior erratic. I find it perfectly predictable. I could tell you exactly how he was going to predict 100% of the time. I'm not kidding. Like, once you understand tit for tat, you know exactly what he's going to do. Always, he's never deviated from it. His strategy for life, I don't know if he rationally one day like figured this out or just over time, this is what has evolved into, but it is a rock solid rule, is tit for tat. So his default is he loves you. He loves you. That's his initial first action, is loves you. As soon as you attack him, he will destroy you. And then if you go back to loving him, he'll love you again. So this is a game theory strategy. There's countless game theory strategies. The technical term is cooperate. He'll cooperate at first. And there's majors dedicated to game theory in college, so we can't do all of this here. But at first, he'll cooperate. And then as soon as someone else defects, he will defect in response. He will always respond in kind, meaning the same way that you act. But his initial response is love. This is why he said, and that's why the left like went nuts when he did this, but he would say nice things about Kim Jong-un. Because Kim Jong-un said nice things about him. But he starts off being nice, right? He starts off being nice to Kim Jong-un, and then Kim Jong-un will like do some, like launch a rocket or something, and then Trump will destroy him, you know, with his words, and then Kim Jong-un will still do something nice, and Trump's back to loving him and thinks he's great, and they're writing love letters to each other. This is why Trump will only say nice things about Gavin Newsom, because Gavin Newsom has never said a bad thing about Trump. Not specifically, not directly. And Trump literally said, I can't say anything bad about him. He was asked about Gavin Newsom. He said, I can't say anything bad about him. That was the quote. Why? Because Newsom's never said anything bad about Trump. So he can't break his code. He can't break the rule. His own rules say he can't defect first. Someone else has to defect on him first before he'll go back and say anything. And if you do say anything bad about him, he'll destroy you. He wrote on Truth Social a while back, he said, if you go after me, I'm coming after you. But he never goes after someone first, ever, ever. It's only after you attack him first. Now we can do a whole game theory analysis. I got a lot more to say here, but if you're like, I don't understand the significance of that, there's lots of other approaches that someone could take. Someone could start out defecting. He could start out hating you. And maybe you know people like that in your life where they start off being a jerk and you have to earn their cooperation. So they start off as a jerk, and then if you do nice things, then they'll put you in their good graces. That's not what Trump does. When Trump meets you, he loves you. You're best friends. But when you say anything bad about him, that's when he defects. And he's good at it. He's destroyed everyone who's ever touched him. Until, again, they say a nice thing about him, and then he'll be back in his good graces. That's his MO. It explains everything he always does. So when someone says, he's mean, I think what they're really saying is he's being unfair or hurtful or cruel or something. But I think that the defense of that is he never hits first. He may hit harder or better, but you would never say something that about someone in a physical contest. Like if you get punched first, you know, no one ever looks at the person who punched back and be like, oh, come on, right? He never hits first. So is what he does unfair? Can Trump be mean if he only hits someone once they hit him first? Can you be mean in defense? So people say he's mean. Is he? I don't know. He's definitely not erratic. You can predict it to a T. Just watch it from now on. You just saw the other day, DeSantis endorsed Trump. So Trump came back the next day and said, oh, the wonderful governor of Florida, the names, nicknames retired, no more DeSanctimonious. He's a great guy. His wife's amazing. Love his wife. And I look forward to doing great things together. All right, that's it. There's nothing irrational about it, ever. Like Trump says, you know what's a mean thing that the media hates? When Trump said that the media is the enemy of the people. Are they not? Maybe people think that Trump says he's mean because we live in such a soft culture that no one's willing to say the truth. So that when someone says the truth about something, it comes across as mean. When really it's just true. All right, so that's the first thing. Second thing, he's mean. I don't know if you want to say tactically or he's mean with precision. This is Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He participated in a debate at Oxford University, the Oxford Union Debate Society. And, you know, he's got the black tie on and everything. And it was just this weekend. It popped up on my YouTube algorithm. And I saw that he did this debate. I was like, what? I don't remember this. So I texted him. I said, did you just do this? Or was it just posted? He's like, oh, it was just posted. This happened back in October, and they just posted it. It's already over 1 million views in 7 days. So the motion was, this House fears the return of Trump's America. Oh, they fear the return of it. And Gorka went up there and judoed these children and said, "Yes, indeed, there are those who should fear the return of Donald Trump." Who should fear the return of Donald Trump? Gorka said, ISIS, jihadis, communists, the human smuggling cartels. They fear Donald Trump. They think he's mean too. They fear him. Who else should fear him?
Iran fears the return of Donald Trump. And so do the cartels. So does Vladimir Putin. I love how everybody's an expert. I love how everybody's an expert suddenly on the Wagner Group. Can I tell you about the Wagner Group? We knew a lot about them when we were in the White House, because we told the president, this is all unclassified now, you can check it up, that there are 300 Russian mercenaries running around the Middle East. I'm good, thank you. And I will be for the next 4 minutes. When we told him that there are 300 mercenaries running around the Middle East, destabilizing that region, what did my boss do? He said, kill them now. And we did. In a 4-hour firefight, we turned 300 Russians into red mist. And what did that diminutive KGB colonel in the Kremlin do? Nothing. Because he wet his pants. Because he's afraid of my bust, as is the little man in the Hermit Kingdom. I'm so glad you pointed about the little button and big button tweet, because that's how you deal with dictators. You say, yeah, I'm going to turn you into sheet of glass, Pyongyang. And what happened? Oh, how interesting. No more ballistic missile launches over the Sea of Japan. A peace summit in Singapore. Yes, that's how you deal with dictators.
The little button, big button reference is when, so someone said that earlier in the debate, they brought up Trump and how he was mean to Kim Jong-un and petty with his little button, big button. And that was a Trump tweet in reference to North Korea. He said, North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the nuclear button is on his desk at all times. Will someone from his depleted, so again, this is a tit for tat, right? Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him that I, too, have a nuclear button, but it is much bigger and more powerful one than his, and my button works. So there's a tit for tat. And does that mean maybe to Kim Jong-un? But most people don't know about that killing of 300 Russians in Syria. Most people didn't know that happened. That was in 2018. I found one story from Politico mocking Trump about that. The headline was, Trump bragged about classified Syria skirmish at fundraiser. The Politico says the details of this battle remain classified, but speaking to donors in Midtown Manhattan last Wednesday, Trump said he was amazed by the performance of American F-18 pilots. He suggested that the strikes may have been as brief as 10 minutes and taken out 100 to 300 Russians. That's the Wagner Group that we heard about a couple months ago. And what did the midwits say about that? Here's what the Politico says. American officials have long feared that a clash with Russia forces in Syria would add tension to the already strained relationship between the two countries. Okay, so Trump goes in there and kills 300 Wagner Group Russian mercenaries in Syria. Experts so scared that a clash would lead to who knows what. And what did Russia do after this attack from Donald Trump? What did Russia do? Nothing. Until when? Until Biden was in office, of course. Russia attacked Ukraine in 2022. But do you remember when the Ukraine war really started? That's when Americans think that the Ukraine war started in 2022. It didn't. It actually started in 2014. Who was in office then? Of course. So Russia launched a war in Ukraine during Obama's presidency. Stopped attacking during Trump's presidency. And then went into Ukraine again when Joe Biden was in office again. You can do what you want with that. But just know that Barack Obama and Joe Biden are very nice. They're very nice. Trump is very mean. One more clip of Gorka. Another midwit moment. This is about moving the capital of Israel to Jerusalem. We mentioned this yesterday in passing, so I thought We should play this too.
Lastly, I will share with you a story about who this man is and why we need him back. For 23 years, every president, from Clinton through Bush to Obama, broke a promise to the world. We had told Israel that we would move the embassy to Jerusalem and recognize that capital. For 23 years, every president on both sides of the aisle reneged on that promise. President Trump said during his campaign, we're going to do it. When he finally called the National Security Council at principals level, not the bureaucrats, the cabinet members, he informed the cabinet members, I'm doing it now. Only three people who worked for him in the cabinet concurred. One of them, and for me this pains me because I spent 2.5 years at Quantico teaching the Marines, I love our devil dogs. The so-called Mad Dog Mattis of the Marine Corps said in front of the cabinet, sir, sir, don't do that. Don't move the embassy. Don't recognize Jerusalem. You will trigger World War III. And I don't have enough Marines to defend our embassies. What did the commander-in-chief say to them? He said, Jim, we are doing it. Why? Because I promised the American people, number one. Number two, we as a nation 23 years ago promised the only democracy in the Middle East that we would do it. Oh, and lastly, Jim, it's the right thing to do. That is why we need him back, because to quote the Marines, when we were in the White House, our friends felt safe and our enemies were afraid. Thank you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Marines, but isn't there another saying, no better friend, no worse enemy? We're electing a commander-in-chief. Third point. If you think Trump is mean, you may not know what time it is. Yesterday, and after the Iowa caucus, we quoted Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech. And we quoted it after the Iowa caucus in particular because of to speak to DeSantis supporters, which I count myself as one. I like Ron DeSantis very much. I look forward to voting for him one day, perhaps. But it's hard to lose. It's hard to lose a race. And I think we should mourn with those who mourn. So we quoted a portion of the Man in the Arena speech. Now, what's interesting about the Man in the Arena speech is the part that everybody quotes. It's a beautiful speech, the whole thing. But the part that everyone quotes, is it's been flipped around as it's something you quote when you lose. and I'll quote it to myself when I fail at something. I'll say, Slater, it's okay. At least you gave it your all. At least you were in the arena. And it's true. But it's also something you say when you lose, so it's a bummer when when someone quotes it for you when you quote it yourself. They're like, it means I probably just lost something. But Teddy Roosevelt didn't mean for this speech to be a consolation speech after a loss. Let me quote this parting question, and then we'll talk about what he really meant. He said, it's not the critic who counts, but the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, but who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there's no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself worthy in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. So you can see how that's a very nice message. If you have indeed tried and failed at something, at least you got in there, you were a man in the arena. But it's not a speech for people who failed. It's a speech to encourage people to get in the arena in the first place. That's what the speech is about. So I went back and I read the whole thing. Because when DeSantis dropped out, I was thinking of that speech. I was like, I should find that part. And I found that part. And then I read the part and I was like, what's the, I want to read the whole thing again. And it's an amazing speech. So I just want to quote this part right here. He's given in France, of all places, and it's a speech about citizenship and what it means to be a citizen. And I would love to quote even more of it another day. So he's at this university, Sorbonne University, founded in 1257. And he's talking about how amazing this school is. he said, before his eyes, that the school passed the shadows of mighty kings and warlike nobles, of great masters of law and theology. Through the shining dust of the dead centuries, he sees crowded figures that tell of the power and learning and splendor of times gone by. So he's talking about the majesty and wonder of this university. And then he's comparing that with our country. And how the people who studied at this university, it's been around for 1,000 years, didn't even dream that there would be an America. And Teddy Roosevelt then says, and then came my forefathers. So he talked about your forefathers here in France and the amazing things they've done and the amazing things they've created. And then Teddy Roosevelt pivots and talks about my forefathers. He said, 3 centuries ago, they were among the sparse bands of traders, plowmen, woodchoppers, and fisher folk who in hard struggle with the iron unfriendliness of the Indian haunted land were laying the foundations of what was now become the great Republic of the West. To conquer a continent, to tame the shaggy roughness of wild nature, means grim warfare. To conquer the wilderness means to wrest victory from the same hostile forces with which mankind struggled in the immemorial infancy of our race. Sinewy folk who thrust forward the frontier in the teeth of savage men and savage nature. And his point in this opening part is that in the beginning of our nation, times were too tough for higher education. Like at Sorbonne University, men were doing everything they could, fighting to not die, fighting against savage men and savage nature just to survive. And dare I say, might I say, if I may, in many ways, that's where we are now. It is barbaric out there. It is wicked. It is murderous. It is ruthless. It is savage. And perhaps if you're saying Trump is too mean, maybe your problem is you don't know yet what we're up against. And it's not that Trump is mean. It's that maybe you're out to lunch. You see my parallel here? Where Teddy Roosevelt's like, oh, Sorbonne University, you guys can concern yourselves with these with the great thoughts of all these grand ideas and philosophy and all the rest. My forefathers couldn't. They were too busy. They were too busy for that stuff. And they were too busy, perhaps, to worry about, is our president nice? Right now, we have a different hierarchy of need that we need to focus on in this country. My final point, and this is my favorite point. Jordan Peterson, in his book, 12 Rules for Life, tells a wonderful story of when he worked on a rail crew. Have you read the book? Do you know the story? So his name, his nickname, everyone, they all gave nicknames to each other. And his nickname was Howdy. Howdy, like Howdy Doody. Called him Howdy. And that's not that bad. Like his nicknames go, he kind of lucked out with Howdy. Because they usually weren't very friendly. Let me read from the book. This is 12 Rules for Life. The next man hired was not so fortunate as he was. He carried a fancy lunch bucket, which was a mistake, as brown paper bags were the proper non-pretentious convention. It was a little too nice and too new. And it looked like maybe his mother had bought it. And maybe even packed it for him. Thus, it became his name. Lunchbucket was not a good-humored guy. He, B-I-T-C-H-T, he complained about everything and had a bad attitude. Everything was someone else's fault. He was touchy and none too quick on the draw. Lunchbucket could not accept his name or settle into his job. He adopted an attitude of condescending irritation when addressed and reacted to work in the same manner. He was no fun to be around. And he couldn't take a joke. That's fatal on a work crew. After about 3 days of carrying on with his ill humor and general air of hard done by superiority, Lunchbuck had started to experience harassment extending well beyond his nickname. He would be peevishly working away on the line, surrounded by about 70 men spread out over a quarter mile. Suddenly, a pebble would appear out of nowhere, flying through the air, aiming at his hard hat. A direct hit would produce a thunking sound, deeply satisfying to all the quietly attending onlookers. Even this failed to improve his humor. So the pebbles got larger. Lunchbucket would involve himself in something and forget to pay attention, then thunk! A well-aimed stone would nail him on the noggin, producing a burst of irritated and ineffectual fury. Quiet amusement would ripple down the line. After a few days of this, no wiser, and carrying a few bruises, Lunchbucket vanished. So what's the point of this story? Jordan Peterson says, men enforce a code of behavior on each other when working together. Do your work, pull your weight, stay awake, pay attention. Don't whine or be touchy. Stand up for your friends. Don't suck up and don't snitch. Don't be a slave to stupid rules. And don't, in the immortal words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, be a girly man. Don't be dependent at all, ever, period. The harassment that is part of acceptance on a working crew is a test. Are you tough, entertaining, competent, and reliable? If not, go away. Simple as that. We don't need to feel sorry for you. We don't want to put up with your narcissism, and we don't want to do your work. So Lunchbucket was gone. Jordan Peterson did an interview with Jocko Willink, which I recommend, many years ago. Jocko was a Navy SEAL. And Jocko was talking about all the nicknames that they would give each other on the SEALs teams. And they were ugly, right? Obviously, that's the point. But they were important. And the way you got on to each other, and Jocko was talking about how this was true on the SEALs, and then Jordan was talking about how this was true in real jobs, like real, like blue-collar, tough jobs, like working on a rail line. He says, the way these guys got on to each other, it was a test. What are you made of? What are you made of? But I don't really care what you're made of. I only care what you're made of because I want to know whether or not I can rely on you. And if the answer is no, if you can't take it, that means I can't rely on you. I don't want you around because the going's going to get tough. And if we can't rely on you because like a little irritation comes your way and you get all like in the fetal position, what are we doing here? What are you doing here? I can't have you around. The stakes are too high. And Lunchbucket couldn't handle it. He thought the people were mean. So if I may, if you think Trump is mean, it's a test. You can't handle it. And that's good for people to know. Because at the very least, and this is a big thing, this is a big thing. The very least, you have no sense of humor. And a sense of humor is essential. Lunchbucket, all Lunchbucket needed to do was to laugh it off. Just laugh it off, be like, oh, yeah, okay, and then, like, that's fine. Or best thing, he could give it back. Right? Like, oh, I don't know, whatever. Like, hey, Lunchbucket, did your mom pack your lunch today? Like, ah, oh, no, not today, but your mom packed it for me this morning or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, give it back. You give it back, you'll be in. Always. Trump has a sense of humor. I remember there was a critique of Trump a while back from the left that he doesn't have a sense of humor. It's like, oh, you guys are way off, way off. This is Whitney Cummings. Whitney Cummings is a comedian. She, years ago, was a part of the Donald Trump roast, a big roast on Donald Trump. And apparently there was an off-limits, and the off-limits was Melania. You couldn't mention Melania. You couldn't make fun of Melania. You couldn't make fun of him and Melania. You couldn't do it. And she said, forget that. So I'm just going to rip on Melania the whole time.
We're talking, making fun of his hair. We're making fun of his, like, how bad he is at business. Like, yeah. Naming. And he was, like, dying laughing the whole time. Get off stage. And he pulls me close, puts his hand on my lower back. He goes, that was great television.
Wow.
He gets
great
it.
Great television.
He gets yeah. it.
If you don't think this is funny, I don't know what to tell you.
You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account
only
is
Rosie
several...
O'Donnell.
No, it wasn't. Your Twitter account.
Thank you.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Your Twitter account.
That's the best part of it. Yes, I'm sure it was. And then he goes on at the end of that clip and he's like, listen, I don't have time for political correctness. All right. We got a country to save. So that's my answer for now on this. This Trump is mean silliness. You can do what you want with all this. First, I don't even know what mean means. Like, what are you talking about? Let's take a break. What do you mean he's mean? Right. If he's mean tactically and rationally. If you think he's mean, maybe you don't know what time it is. And finally, a thick skin and a sense of humor is essential. You better grow both of them fast, or else maybe we can't rely on you. Welcome back to Breitbart News Daily. The great Alex Marlowe, where the man can't stop writing books and chapters to books, and he can't stop making babies either. The fourth Marlowe child now, 3 weeks old, Alex?
2 weeks old, but thank you, Mike, for giving me more credit than I deserve.
Well, you did all the things. I didn't make any of that stuff up. Yeah. How's the baby?
Wonderful. I was spending a lot of time with her. I've been up for a long time, even though I'm out west, because we were just bonding in the middle of the night. So she had a quick feed, but she was up and we were just hanging out. So we just sort of read the internet together for a while. So such a beautiful moment. It's funny, but it's also real, because sometimes you don't know. With Duchess Marlowe, my third child, she got to go solo on a romantic vacation with me and Mrs. Dr. Marlowe in her infancy. And I just remember sitting outside in the middle of the night of holding her and giving her a bottle. And it seems like a pain in the butt when she wakes up. But then you realize by the end of the feed, or just, you know, you're half an hour together, how you're never going to forget it ever. And it just is, just add that to the pile of stuff you could never anticipate with parenthood, which is so wonderful, which is why I preach that to this audience. And people have told me they're having kids because I say that stuff. So I will keep saying it, or stop sending me email telling me you're having kids because of the stuff I'm saying.
No, it's one of those things that it's gone and then it's gone. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing. And
this will probably be my last child. So this is, I am trying to take it in a little deeper, because this will probably be my last rodeo in this regard.
Yeah, it is. It's some of these trite sayings are true. It's the days are long and the years are fast, right? That's such like a corny thing you write on a wall or something.
But it's so on the money.
Yeah, that's wild. Well, that's awesome. I'm glad everyone's going
thank
well.
Thank you, and thanks for your encouragement.
Of course. I want to talk about New Hampshire, of course. I want to talk about Nikki Haley. But first, I want to play this clip I thought of you the other day. This is Iowa caucus, and they're counting votes on slips of paper that they're pulling out of a popcorn bucket.
Trump.
Like what is, like, old school, like 80s Trump looking popcorn buckets. And here's John King on CNN.
Trump.
This is what happens everywhere, in Democratic precincts, in Republican precincts, in evenly drawn precincts, all across America on election nights, whether they're using a hand ballot like this and counting it right before your very eyes, doing the arithmetic we all learned in grammar school, or whether they're using machines, but they can also double check the machines as well. There are ways to do this. This, to me, as someone who's done this for 40 years, forgive me for editorializing, is the saddest part of our democracy, that people doubt this. You're watching it tonight, Republicans. This is a Republican process you're watching tonight. These are honest, hardworking Americans counting votes, doing it right. There's every reason to believe, because it has always been so, that this will continue all the way through the process. I love watching this because it's working the way it's supposed to work, because it works.
It's like, yeah, John, you're watching them literally count ballots, and we're watching because there's a camera 1 foot away watching it. This is how they did it in Iowa, and no one doubts the results of the Iowa caucus and their integrity, but this is not how it's done everywhere else.
Yeah, you're so right about this. And I did make this point after Iowa. I don't know if I had the chance because of the new baby to make it here with you, Mike, but it's the democracy thrives in Iowa. It was negative 1 million degrees. It was, you know, the results were never in doubt. Everyone knew it was going to be a historic blowout for Trump. And so all of these people who value civic engagement, who value our democracy or our our representative republic, whatever people would like to, whatever phrase you'd like to use. We understand that we're talking about the same stuff. They all showed up, voted. They voted in droves. They voted peacefully. We have no doubt what the election results were. It's all of that was happening. And the attack, like, that's impossible, that we need to have voter IDs. We need to have 9 extra days. We can't have postmarks on ballots. We can't have signature matching. All that stuff is just such lies and frauds. And it's all stuff we're going to witness. It, as every state has their own individual rules. And we're going to witness this all again this year. And it's going to be total chaos. And it is going to erode our natural trust and consciousness and confidence kind of heading into November of this year.
Yeah, so breaking the news, you write about the cheat by mail system brought to you by a whole bunch of people, including Mark Zuckerberg, among others. And you wrote an article on Breitbart.com about that. People can check all that out. Has any of that changed in 2024?
Or
whoever loses is going to be the one who complains about it.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. And in fact, it's the... I can bet that if Trump wins, he'll still complain because he knows how irritating that is to the people who hate him. Like, he'll still say it could have been a bigger margin. Yeah, right. And by the way, he'll be correct when he says that. This is where I wrote a major piece, and thank you for mentioning breaking the news. It is which I know this audience was big supporters of. When it came out a couple of years ago, it's been updated and re-released. And the reason why it's out now is because of this part of the book. It's the people will have a great time learning some biographical stuff about me. If you pick up the book, it's got more biography than Breaking Biden. It also goes through thoroughly all the fake news of the Trump era. So you really see all the bad guys and what they did and the extent to which they tried to subvert our democracy by undoing a democratically elected president, which is exactly what they did. It was a total insurrection. And I don't think that we've fully processed how bad it was. All that's in there, that will not be unfamiliar to this audience. But the thing that's most important to note is I break down what I think was the real cheating that took place. And it wasn't Dominion flipping votes. It was manipulation by big tech and using the coronavirus to manipulate our voting system so that it was any sort of shenanigans could be hidden. And some of these shenanigans are legal, where you've got people who are paid Democrat operatives who are going around collecting ballots that otherwise would not have been turned in and turned in ostensibly on behalf of Joe Biden. All of this was done by a massive, expensive, coordinated effort by the Democrat Party and their allies. None of this is respectful of this country. It's a total disrespect of this country, what it means to be an American, our founding documents, our founding myth, one person, one vote, equality, equity, whatever value you have in your life, it subverts that aside from getting Democrats elected. And that's the story that we need to process, because I'm not seeing sufficient strides being taken by people who agree with us politically, Mike, between since then to today. We still have some time. But the bottom line is we're not going to fix everything because we don't have the power right now. So the main thing is we need to assure that we win every possible race and every possible seat this time around so that we can make those wholesale changes and hopefully have a stable system for decades to come.
What do you say the argument, the counter is, we are getting a truer sense of what more people actually do want. This is actually more democracy. It's better democracy. And what's the difference if you go to a housing complex or an apartment and you knock on people's doors and you help them to hand in their ballot and you grab it for them to get a better idea of what the people really want?
Yeah, I do think that there has to be some sort of a level of commitment to have a society that is, I think, as high functioning, as excellent as we would like to think of America. We always have thought of America as a city on a hill. And if you look at our history, if you look at the people who were around at the founding of our country, they were of incredibly high. They were virtuous people, or at least they thought of themselves that way. I mean, I wasn't there, but their value system was very strong, and they were incredibly civically engaged. They were even willing to fight wars violently to protect some of those values. We're losing touch of a lot of that stuff right now. And that is I feel like we are not civically engaged. We are much more engaged with whether or not Taylor Swift's at the football game or whatever's going on in our feed than we are in terms of what's actually happening in our republic right now at a civic level. That's a disgrace. Of course, we're getting more godless and we're having our values are less strong on average than they have been. And I think we need a big course correct in this regard. And you know what makes things easier to course correct? When you don't even have to bother to drag your behind to the polls once every 4 years. You can have someone who is paid by the Democrat Party to turn in your ballot. And by the way, those people are willing to pay you to do it. Now, is it, can you make the case that if that's all people are willing to commit, then that is what it is? Yeah, that's what Democrats are doing. But I would like to think that we are capable as a country of being excellent. And that's not excellent. That's beneath mediocrity. That's a disgrace if that's who we are.
I will said, I told the story the other day of William Wilberforce, 1700s over in England. And it was freezing cold, freezing bitter cold. And there's a blizzard. And he gave a like 2 hour long speech out. So it's not only that he gave the speech, but that people stood out in the cold.
Yeah, they stood out there
to hear it. And they were still part to be willing to be engaged, needed to.
Yeah, I caught that segment. It's a terrific point. And that's the exact type of stuff that we need to inspire people with, that because it shows what we're capable of. We're capable of that.
Yes.
And
yes.
What are we doing now?
30-second rebuttals.
Exactly. And at the most, the 15-second TikTok videos. And should we expect ourselves to be better? I'm a youngish person. I've got young children. I believe in this country, believe in the Constitution. Of course, I think that we need to be better and we need to demand that of ourselves. And if you disagree, fine, but then you're probably not listening to this broadcast first thing in the morning.
Hmm. Yeah, now we've degraded to show of hands. What's lower there? Like everyone gets one facial expression.
Now. Yeah, let's just do a voice vote. Let's vote by emoji. Yeah, everyone gets a QR code. Yeah, you can punch in your QR, scan it on your China made iPhone, and then you can vote that way.
Absurd. Let's talk about Nikki for a few minutes here, because she may win today. Alex,
it's possible.
How did we get to the point where Nikki Haley is the non-Trump candidate?
Yeah, I think part of it is I had a family member who said to me that they sort of admired her rhino skin, how she's able to stand up to a lot of people and go out there and take a lot of slings and arrows. And I don't know Nikki Haley at all. I haven't interviewed her. She is somewhat communicative with Breitbart, more so than Ron DeSanctimonious. Ron DeSanctimonious.
That's been retired.
DeSanctus. DeSanctus. You know I call him DeSanctus. He says, DeSanctis was less communicative than Nikki with us. So, you know, I do give her some credit, even though I disagree with, it feels like more than half of her politics, which is shocking considering we're both Republicans. But I can't tell if she's just got a huge level of ambition and a lot of rhino hide and it's impressive, or if it's what I feel in my heart, which is that she's got a disconnect and that there's just something that she just does not have a level of shame, and she is willing to sell out in order to get money and power that most of us just simply cannot fathom. And
yeah, but she's going to get 30% of the vote or something, whatever. You know,
yeah, but you know, it's an odd primary because, first of all, it's now sort of a two-horse race, and I think New Hampshire is one where Democrats can vote. The state is run by rhino Republicans or very, very moderate Republicans who seem to have more in common with Democrats, certainly with the establishment, as we describe it at Breitbart, than with anything Trump represents. So, and those people are going to vote in the primaries today. So it wouldn't blow me away if Haley wins. And I do think that I think Trump's going to win. And if Trump wins by more than, you know, 8 or 10 points, it's got to be I think this thing's done tonight. But you know, it's not impossible. It's because of the nature of this unique state, but that's okay with me. I don't live in New Hampshire. New Hampshire can choose who they want to choose. If they like someone who wants to aid the defense contractors and to fight wars every place and to, you know, build up the Washington swamp, and equivocates on trans issues and equivocates in the open borders, if that's who they like, then you know what? That's who they like, but it's not who I would vote for.
Well, she was bullied when she was younger. So,
oh boy. Well, in that case, I should reconsider everything.
Yesterday we were talking about Nikki and who is this person? Like, who's this person that supports DeSantis specifically? But now that he's out, can't jump on the Trump train and then goes to Nikki. Yeah. It's like, I don't get that Venn diagram. And we had a bunch of people calling.
It's sore losers. I mean, is. It's the, if you're still someone who has this illusion that Ron DeSantis is some sort of virtuoso political figure. He's not. He's is a competent, executor of certain policies that I think favor the state of Florida very well, and he deserves a lot of praise for that. But he's not an inspiring national political figure. I think that's been pretty clear at this point.
We had a few people call in and talk about the mean tweets, Trump's mean. Mm-hmm. And I got some thoughts I want to share on that in the next segment, but what's your overall, what's your response to that person that maybe like my Nana, I don't even know if my Nana would have that mentality, but sort of the Nana mentality of, oh, Alex.
Yeah, I played sports growing up, so trash talk is just what happens. I make this comment a lot to friends and family that I have certain male friends that I have to say heinous, insulting things that if Media Matters or some hacker ever gets a hold of my email, they're going to find all these things where I say these horrible things to friends of mine, and I don't even like it. I just know they like it, and that's Trump. He's just a trash talker. Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, they're all trash talkers. You know what they do? They also win. If you don't like it, fine. You don't like it. I don't love it. It's not how I interact typically, but I understand it. And didn't we make our peace with this 7 years ago? Are we going to really give the country back to Joe Biden over it?
Yeah. I think there are people who just can't. Yeah. Dude, I got 1 minute, but some guy wrote me an email. Oh, he deserves better. He wrote me a nice thoughtful email, but it was something like Trump does a good thing and then he shoots himself in the foot afterwards with like something he says about it. And yeah, he's frustrated by that.
It happens. I mean, Selena Zito had the right quote, which is you got to take Trump figuratively.
Yeah, seriously, but, not literally.
Yeah. Seriously, but not literally. And his opponents take him literally, but not seriously. That's it. That's the quote. And that's how you got to approach it. And if you can't, you're going to drive yourself crazy. So I say this for your own peace of mind. Even if you don't like him, I mean, at least for your own peace of mind, just think, I spent 2 hours with him a couple weeks ago, Mike. I don't know if he said one literal thing the whole time. And if he did, he only did it to be a curveball.
Yeah. Alex Marlowe, editor-in-chief, Breitbart.com, for us. Breaking the news, now out in paperback. So if you don't have it in the hardcover, buy the paperback. If you do have the hardcover, you might as well get the paperback too, get the complete set. And then, of course, Breaking Biden, the newest book. Yeah, I got that one. What are we doing here? Alex, great to talk to you, bro.
Mike, congrats on the first deal. I'm loving watching on TV, so keep the good work.
Thanks, man. You can stream. We can simulcast now on thefirsttv.com. There we are. Channel 347, DirecTV, First TV app, firsttv.com. We're everywhere.
American made, I got American parts.
Of course, we'll have our post New Hampshire coverage. I don't know what's going to happen tonight. Like, there's a chance Nikki Haley wins or does well. Like, what if she loses by 4? Like, now we got to do this whole thing for another month. Going to Nevada and then New South Carolina. So we'll see. We have live election coverage tonight on the First TV where we stream this show. TheFirstTV.com, First TV app. Got Bill O'Reilly at 8 o'clock Eastern, and then I'll be here for the next 2 hours after that with reaction and analysis of the New Hampshire primary. And then, of course, we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning. Mike Slater, Breitbart News Daily. Spread the word.